KBPS on PRP, student radio for the city of Portland. Joe Anderson here, your host. Thanks for tuning in. Join me as we hear from students across the Portland Public School District, powered by AM 1450 KBPS Portland. For 100 years, KBPS has been the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Brought to you by Portland Radio Project, KPRP LP Portland, your nonprofit community radio station. This is KBPS on PRP.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing social media usage and how that in younger generations affects development. I'm here today with...
I'm Mildred.
I'm Ian.
I'm Judd.
And I'm our host, Leo. So, let's get started. John. All right, for our first question, when do you guys first check social media?
I usually like right when I wake up, I just go on TikTok for a little bit.
How long is a little bit?
Like until I want to get ready for school.
Yeah, for me, I feel like it takes a little bit after I like put my clothes on and stuff while I'm eating breakfast. I usually look at social media.
You're on social media while you put your clothes on?
No. After.
Okay. That makes more sense.
I'm not the same. I'm usually not on my phone until I'm like eating breakfast. And even sometimes I won't do it until then. Like I won't do it until after I'm eating breakfast.
Right when I wake up, I use it for like 10 minutes. So then the blue light wakes me up.
Okay. And do you guys find yourselves going to those apps often?
I don't mess with Instagram Reels.
No. It's probably my most used app on my phone, so...
Instagram Reels?
No. Well, just Instagram. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't really use it that much.
Well, I use it, like, all the time. It's kind of like when you open your phone, it's just instinctively, like, go on TikTok. But I'm doing this thing where I don't use it, and it just transferred to Instagram.
Okay. Do you think that your media usage has had any positive or negative effects on your mental or physical well-being?
Probably.
Do you care to elaborate a little bit?
The way I go on TikTok, like when I'm bored.
Yeah, that's valid.
I feel like social media has just had a more positive effect on me. I feel like it has a positive effect on me because I mainly use like YouTube and stuff. To inform.
YouTube Reels? Shorts? You be messing with YouTube Shorts?
Nah, I hate YouTube Shorts. It's stupid. You're just trying to be like TikTok.
I would have to agree with that. And I think media has probably had the negative effect of shortening my attention span, but it's also had the positive effect of like allowing me to stay up to date on certain things and just sort of be there when I need something to do when I'm bored.
My mom's been restricting a lot of my social media usage since a young age, but like at 12 through like 15 maybe, I'd say it had a very negative effect on me because there's so many pretty people there and I don't look like them or fit the Eurocentric beauty standard. But besides that, it's been very informative.
Cool. And why don't you guys like YouTube Shorts as an alternative media to TikTok? Do you just feel it's not as, I don't know, creative?
Because you get the cringy TikToks they're trying to, you know, they're the ones that are like super obvious that you can tell they're fake.
Like scripted content?
Yes.
And TikTok is just a lot more funny.
Okay, so the issue sounds like it's the algorithm. So you need that personalization of your content.
No, well,
to truly appreciate
people
it.
People don't like use it. Like Judd was saying, like there's so many more people on TikTok and Instagram. Then why would you use YouTube Shorts?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. I think that to get people to use it, you would need to have consumers on that site. So it's sort of like a vicious cycle, you know, which I just think is interesting.
And YouTube is mostly long form content as well. It's not like 30-second videos, mm-hmm. like 90% of the time.
Right. And I mean, I think I usually see like the younger, like anywhere from like, I don't know, 7 to 10 year olds using YouTube, whereas TikTok is more like 10 to 13 or 10 to 20 or up. Do you think that shifts in age gaps, like having little kids go onto TikTok versus just YouTube, and the control of that, has that, like, do you think that that has changed their development in any way?
I think that it has. I think it's because kids have access to YouTube, whereas they don't have access to TikTok most commonly. And I think it definitely has affected kids. It probably shortens their attention span, messes up their dopamine receptors, and just sort of makes them more early on, more dependent on a device or something to hold their attention at all times.
Do any of you other people have thoughts on that?
I was going to say, I feel like TikTok has become such a big thing that even if parents try to stop their kids from using it, they're just going to try and figure out a way how to use it. And I mean, you see a lot of kids like affected by that. You see people just walking around like anywhere with their phones like in their face. So
also TikTok is just like really easy to get and easy to just keep scrolling and scrolling.
Okay. So for my next question, what type of content do you guys find yourself consuming the most, and has that like changed throughout your childhood?
Vroom, vroom. Cars. Love cars.
Like the movie?
Yeah, that too. I've been watching a lot of car content lately.
Nice.
I used to just watch like probably Dinosaur Train. That was my go-to as a wee lad.
I'm on TikTok like most of the time, right? So like my whole For You page just changes depending on what like thing that I'm like fixated on at that like era in time, you know. So right now my whole For You page is the Hunger Games, because they all got added on the Netflix. It's like my whole For You page is just the Hunger Games. And I don't know, sometimes it's like Marvel or like Star Wars. There's a dark Five Nights at Freddy's phase.
Well, childhood, like, my mom really restricted it, so it was a lot of like Dora and then like the Mandarin version of Dora, and but now it's just mostly The Walking Dead and cats.
Yeah, I consume a lot of cat content.
They're silly.
They are. That's how I describe cats.
Do you guys have cats at home?
I do have a cat.
I do.
Dogs are better.
Yeah. Okay. I have a cat. His name is Cielo.
I have a cat, and his name is Darby.
I have two cats, and their names are Bridget and Petunia.
I didn't even know that.
I have two dogs and two cats, and we got the cats at the same time. They're sisters. We got them in quarantine.
That's cute.
They're very adorable.
What is the dynamic between your dogs and your cats?
Oh, they really hated each other at first, but now they don't mind each other. Like, I don't know, when we first brought them into the same room together, they like barked and hissed and like got mad at each other. And then we had to like let them slowly warm up to each other by seeing each other from other... We put a wall that they could see through in the middle of like the hallway. We had to keep them on both sides of it, and then they warmed up to each other.
My cousin's cat is my cat's cousin, and yeah, they're cousins.
Hey, Tana, do your cats act like your dogs because they've been around each other?
Not really. Well, all my animals and pets just kind of lay around. They're all pretty lazy.
Sounds like me. I just lay around. I'm pretty lazy.
So much for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you all for coming.
I love everybody.
All right, thank you. I hope that through this discussion you've learned a little bit and just gained insight into these guys' lives a little bit. Can take that and apply it to your own life. And that's
shaboing boing.
He stole my word. That's my word.
What media did I grow up with that changed me into me? Well, the medias I had while growing up were mostly cartoons and toy ads like the ones on TV. One of the cartoons I watched as a kid was Pleasant Gome Big Big Wolf. It was about a group of goats living on grassland and a really clumsy wolf that always tried to eat them, but he never managed to. That cartoon made me not want to be mean to others and treat others with a lot of respect. I also watched a lot of YouTube too. I would always watch Hot Wheels videos because it was just so satisfying to watch the cars loop around the track really fast. that made me want to build the same track. So I always begged my mom to buy me some Hot Wheels for me and my little brother to play with. So that's how some media has changed me into me.
I'm Connor and...
My name is Joel.
My name is Oliver.
My age is 16.
I am 16.
My age is 7.
The media outlet that I consume the most is YouTube.
Instagram.
TikTok.
Media influences teenagers the most.
I've been very educated on like a bunch of different topics because of media.
I see a lot of things about that online where they're like talking about how teenagers get affected by media a lot.
A little bit of both, because I'm like, I'm more informed, but I'm also like much more aware of a bunch of random information that brings.
What's that mileage?
I got like 2K hours, I think, all time.
I think media has overall affected my opinion in a negative way.
Mindless entertainment. So it's like, you can just scroll and you'll find something interesting. I have a really short attention span, so I like scrolling a lot because I get a lot of like serotonin really quickly.
Oh, because we're gullible?
Maybe like 10 to 11 year olds, I don't know.
Infotainment is news that is a little bit more analysis.
Infotainment means entertainment that also has a meaning behind it, to where it tries to push a certain agenda onto the viewer.
It's like entertainment that tries to integrate ideas that are trying to persuade you into a direction, like an ideology.
Infotainment can be fun, like shows like Stephen Colbert or Trevor Noah. Like, I think those shows are really fun.
Sometimes where it's not informative enough, but there's a lot of times where it is. When I watch the news, it's usually either in my house or at school, because some teachers will put on CNN 10.
When I watch the news, I don't really rely on it that much. Usually the things that I see come from Inside Edition, which isn't really reliable.
I tend to go to like the New York Times. While it leans a little bit left, it's still quite factual. The AP Press, Wall Street Journal, things that are much more in the middle.
Last time I got my news was from YouTube. I saw this video on like what's happening in the world, I guess. I think some of them have biases depending on like who uploads like the news, but I feel like that's a little better than like watching like a news source that sometimes is like biased. Watching news source on YouTube, you can get other people's opinion instead of having just one.
Probably get it the most from YouTube. That's the app I use the most. Like independent media sources, people that go out and interview people from places that they think are interesting. Not like CNN or Fox or anything like that. I don't watch any of those places.
The news is important to me because it shows me what's going on around in the world. And sometimes those things can probably affect the people that I know or someone that's important in my life.
The news is important to me because we're all in relationship with our communities, and we are also global citizens. So whether we realize it or not, we're in a relationship, however far removed, with people on the other side of the world. Also, I find that entertainment, like shows and movies, are more enjoyable when I have context.
The news is not super important to me, but I still find it pretty interesting. Sometimes it can just lie to you, but hopefully it often doesn't. It's fun to watch.
The news is important to me because then I won't know like what's happening in the world and like the struggles of other people. So I feel like that's very important.
I think the news, you learn new things. That's what's interesting about it.
The news is very depressing, and the amount of suffering that we like expose ourselves to through the news, I think, is entirely new, and it really can overwhelm our system,
I don't think the news affects me that much, you know? Really, it kind of depends on, like, what's on the news.
It doesn't really affect me. I don't know, if something is, like, a viscerally awful event, then I'll kind of be disgusted for a few hours, and then maybe I'll forget about it, or it'll, like, stick with me for a while. It only really affects me in, like, a negative way sometimes. The news isn't very important in my life.
I think my parents definitely are affected by the news a lot more. They can't really pick out, like, certain unbiased news source, so they just watch, like, news that have an agenda to push on. I think when you regulate things, then it can get, like, biased, sort of. It's counterintuitive, because when you try to lessen bias, you just have, like, your own bias to the news source.
I think we really need regulation.
Hello, it's Oscar.
And Ariana, live from AM 1450 KBPS on PRP. Karol G is a top 200 global. She is a reggaeton and Latin trap artist and has multiple features with Romeo Santo, Bad Bunny, and Quavo. Here are just a few songs from her. La que te digo que un vacío se llena con otra persona te miente. Es como tapar una herida con maquillaje, no se ve, pero se siente. Te fuiste diciendo que me superaste y que conseguiste nueva novia. Lo que ella no sabe es que tú todavía me estás viendo toda la papi. Historia, bebé, ¿qué fue? No, pues que muy tragadito. Pasaporte. Estoy madura, dicen los reportes.
Ahora tú quieres volver, sé que no tan sé. Espérame ahí, que yo soy idiota.
Se te olvidó que estoy en otra y que te quedó grande la bichota.
Bebé, ¿qué fue? No, pues que muy tragadito. Que estoy buscándome el lado. Si sabes que yo errores no repito. Dile a tu nuevo. Fuiste yo me puse triple M. Más buena, más dura, más leve. Volver contigo nueve. Tú eras la mala suerte. Porque ahora la bendición no me llueve. Ni quieres volver, ya lo suponía. Dándole like a la foto mía. Tú buscando por fuera la comida. Yo diciendo que era monotonía. Y ahora quieres volver, ya lo suponía. Dándole like a la foto mía.
Feliz con tu nueva vida, pero si ella supiera que me busca todavía.
Bebé, ¿qué fue? Pues que muy tragadito. Yo estoy buscándome el lado. Si sabes que yo errores no repito. Dile a tu nueva bebé que por hombres no compito. Que no tiene buena mano y al menos yo te tenía bonito.
I'll be on the drums.
Koji has won Billboard Latin Music Award for Top Latin Albums of the Year, Female, in 2022, 2021, and in 2020. Mañana Será Bonito by Karol G has reached top one in the Billboard 200 Global since Selena's song, Dreaming of You, in 1995.
Por su amor, diste todo y te traicionó. Perdonaste. azulito. Quita la niebla fue un ratito. Y nadie puede apagar tu río. Porque mañana será bonito. Porque el león solo era un gatito. Porque hoy el cielo se ve clarito. Y nadie puede apagar tu río. Porque mañana será bonito. Bonito, bonito. Porque mañana será bonito.
Oye, qué linda te ve, cómo te luce esa sonrisa. Los ojitos resaltan esa carita. Mírate al espejo, qué rica te ves. Estás soltera, mira que te queda bien. Ahora todos dicen, guau, cómo se puso de chimbita. Estás solita y se ve más mamacita. No te pongas triste, mami, no llores. Y él se la perdió y otra como tú no va a tener. Cuánto tiempo en intentar.
Eso no va a la vida, ni lo mejor.
Es tiempo de disfrutar.
Mami, te está fea,
no lo mereces.
Porque en la vida no podemos retroceder y recuperar el tiempo perdido, pero sí podemos volver a empezar.
Porque mañana será bonito, porque este cielo vuelve azulito. Porque la niebla fue un ratito y nadie puede apagar tu río. Porque mañana será bonito, porque el león solo era un gatito. Porque hoy el cielo se ve clarito y nadie puede apagar tu río. Porque mañana será bonito.
Thank you for listening. This has been Oscar
and Ariana live from KBPS AM 1450 on PRP.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart.
Hello, this is Colby with the KBPS Radio, and I'm here with Zip.
Hi there.
So today we figured we'd just talk about D&D. Now, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about D&D, but I find it very interesting, and Zip knows a lot about D&D.
Yeah, I've been playing D&D for about 5 to 6 years at this point.
Okay, that's actually genuinely impressive. Most games I've played for like 3 years at the most.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a hyperfixation of mine.
I mean, I get it. It's super interesting.
There's infinite possibilities for everything.
Also, it's very easy to do a lot of dumb stuff.
Very easy. That depends on your dungeon master or DM for short.
My friend Jack, he loves D&D, part of a D&D club, and he just constantly finds ways to ruin the entire thing.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who purposely try to do the most insane stuff. Some people don't like them. Some people do. The common term is called a murder hobo. I know, it's a very funny term, but it's basically just somebody who's not letting the other players have fun. Either by, like, taking over the campaign, killing everything, you know, there's a lot of possibilities.
That sounds like a story. My friend Jack was telling me he was playing with this one kid who somehow managed to just one-shot every single boss. I don't think it was a fist, but I know the weapon was just insanely weak. It might have just been a dagger. I think he had the starting dagger and just used that to one-shot every single boss that they fought.
Yeah, I have two stories about that. Both of them take place in the campaign that I'm playing in later today, actually. One of them is my character. I told the DM and the other players, this is a power build. I don't normally play power builds. This one specifically is. And it's to the point where I can make somebody not be able to attack me, and I can just punch them repeatedly 5 times a turn and deal more damage than I should at that level. But then the other thing is that we had a player join us for a couple sessions, and they, unfortunately, were a murder hobo. And how they did so is whenever we were doing anything, they would interrupt the person talking and ask the DM, hey, can I do a spontaneous backflip? Over and over, every 30 seconds. I had to kick him out of the club because he wouldn't stop even when people asked him to.
No, stuff like that, actually, I find funny. It's definitely annoying. But I mainly love when people find ways to just absolutely break games. Yeah. Like, one of my personal favorite games is called Destiny 2, but it's very well known for being absolutely broken.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's this one class called Titan. Now, they have a solar melee ability, which does probably on average 10,000 damage.
Yeah.
It could do 3 million damage. There's this one boss. It's designed to not be able, like, to be one-shotted. Yeah, that didn't last very long. That took about a month, and then it was one-shotted.
Yeah.
Like, I love finding ways to just break games.
I have a power build. One of my characters, his name was Stiggy Formez, and he was a air cockra, which is basically just a bird person. It's a person with wings who can fly. His whole combo was that he was a conjuration wizard, and they get a minor ability where they can make something that fits into the palm of your hand, weighs less than 10 pounds, isn't magical, isn't alive. And you can make whatever you want. So you can make lockpicking tools, you can make a key, you can make a
Bluetooth
stone,
speaker.
You can make a weapon. You could make a Bluetooth speaker. Stiggy's whole combo was that he would summon a maul, M-A-U-L, not M-A-L-L. It's a kind of weapon that is kind of like a hammer. What he would do is he would fly up super high, summon a hammer, and drop it on enemies. Every 10 feet that something falls, when it impacts, it deals 1d6 damage each, with a maximum of 20d6. I would fly up, you know, 200 feet, do a dexterity or basically like aiming check, and then I would try to drop a hammer on an enemy, dealing 22d6 if it hits.
Now,
at second level.
For people who don't know, what's a d6?
It is a six-sided dice. That's the most common kind of dice that you see in general, like, you know, the ones with the little dots. But typically in D&D, it just has the number on them. But if we want to talk about dice, there are, like, six different kinds of dice. There's, you know, the basic D6. There's D4s, which are for, like, minor kinds of damage. There are D8s, D10s, D12s, D20s, and D100s. D100s, they have 10 sides, but unlike the D10, they have a 0, so they're in decimals of 10. So if you want to do like a percentile check, if you want to get a number between 1 and 100, you would do the 100-sided dice and the 10-sided dice, roll that together, and then it would be like, you know, if the 100-sided dice had a 4-0 on it, and then the other one had a 2, it would be 42.
Oh, okay, that makes
a
lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense, except when you tell people that there are 100-sided dice in Dungeons & Dragons, like, how do you even make that?
I just assumed, like, when you said 100-sided, I thought, like, a big dice you have to roll with, like, two hands.
I actually have a 100-sided dice. Not, like, one of those. I have one that has literally 100 sides.
How much did that cost you?
$30. I got it on Etsy.
Okay. Why?
Because I wanted to say that I have one. It also came with a 48-sided dice and a 127-sided dice.
Can you even use any of those?
No, not at all. I just thought it was hilarious.
I mean, yeah, I buy a lot of just dumb stuff because I can and it looks funny.
Oh, yeah. I, unfortunately, spend most of my money on D&D just because it's my main hobby. I collect minifigures, I collect dice, I collect the books. And, like, the minifigures, if they're unpainted, they can be anywhere from $10 to $20. Painted ones are $30 to $50. Books, you know, $30 to $60.
All right, it's probably a good thing that I didn't get into D&D because I already spend all of my money on stuff.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what. It just like comes in my account, then it's gone.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing about Dungeons & Dragons. You don't actually have to spend money on it. Most of the books are online. You can buy online PDFs. If you want to get actual copies of stuff, then you do have to pay for it. But there's an online website I like to use. I don't mind sharing it because I don't care enough. It's Anyflip, anyflip.com, and you can get any of the Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition books on there. There are also more free online PDF and book things you can get on there.
Huh. I mean, that's really cool, but like knowing me, I would definitely spend my money on that because I just like collecting things.
Exactly.
Like if you look in my game room, there's just stuff that I don't really even know how I got them. I just kind of have it.
Yeah.
And there's stuff that like I have too much of, so it just kind of piled on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Zip, do you have any like interesting D&D stories?
Oh, I got tons. After 6 years of playing, I have more than I can count. I do have a couple written down though.
Okay.
Yeah. One of my favorites is 42. This was a Warforged, basically a robot. He was originally made to serve somebody else. He was a defender build. He had somebody who was his, you know, master. And whenever his master dies, the next person he sees becomes his new master.
That's only the minions from Despicable Me.
It is a lot like that. Or if the previous master wants to give it to somebody else, they can. How I joined the campaign, because I didn't join at the very start. I had a previous character that I scrapped. It was a turtle rogue that was called the Wave Assassin. but he was just boring, so I scrapped him and I started playing 42. But 42 was the number of previous masters he has had. So he was originally 41, but when he joined the campaign, the first character he saw was the suck-up high elf that was super full of himself and made fun of everybody else.
The name hurts.
Character to have a literal servant. That character was following the god of death and greed. And in return for power, this character traded me to the death god. But in order for the death god to have control over me, because it was a, you know, higher being, we had to find a lower being that could control over me that the god could control. Very confusing, I know. We decided on a little water bug. We put it in my head. We put it in one of my eyeballs so I could take it out. And because I had telepathy with my master, his name was Maurice, and he spoke in a New Yorker accent the entire time, but was just being controlled by a death god.
I haven't met Maurice, but I already know I'm going to like them.
They were pretty chill. They did not tell me to do anything unless the death god was controlling them. The two other things that were interesting about this character is, one, we got captured by some underwater scrap mechanics. It was also a slave trade, but they were mainly in the scrapping business. But when they captured me, I was the first Warforged ever created in this world. So, you know, a being made purely of metal and wood, not actually alive. They saw me, and they pulled me aside from the rest of the group, and they guided me to a room. Everybody else had handcuffs on. I didn't. They let me just walk around normally. I didn't attack them. I just wanted to see where I was going. They brought me to a massive room, and in the center of it was a statue of me.
That's kind of cool.
It turns out that even before I joined the campaign, the Dungeon Master already planned for this group to have a savior that was a being made completely of metal, you know, the thing that they worship being scrap mechanics. I found out that they had previous gods, but right now they only had one god that controlled them. Nobody was ever allowed to see them. They stayed in their room and they sent telepathic messages to all of the other servants. I was supposed to free them from their god. So me, you know, this level 6 fighter, not strong enough to fight a god, was like, you know what? I'll do it. I go into the room. It is a boss. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna fight him. And I won. Don't know how.
The best thing you can always do is just go in unprepared and hope it works out.
Exactly. And after defeating this god, I had control over about 3 billion scrap mechanics. I became their new god.
That works.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the campaign did end, but in a different campaign where I was playing a different character, we kept on finding out that our final boss, this was an interdimensional campaign. We found out that the final boss was known as the Lord of the Multiverse. And eventually we found out it was 42, my old character. The DM liked my character so much that he based another campaign around him and made him the final boss. That is how one of my characters became the Lord of the Multiverse. My character, my new character, actually did end up defeating him. He was the one to deal the final blow.
D&D seems really, really dumb, but in a really, really fun way.
What do you mean by dumb? Be careful with your response.
Like fun. Like dumb in a fun way. Like just, it's not like dumb as in stupid, it's just dumb like fun.
Okay, I guess I can see what you're
saying. Yeah, you can't help but just laugh throughout the whole process. And this is so stupid, but you love it.
Yeah. Actually, I have a funny D&D story. This one is with a character that I'm still playing named Zaguar, Arthrelish. Very complicated name. They are a Videlkin, which is basically a knowledge creature. They typically have cool skin, so like blue or purple, and they are really good at collecting knowledge. They're also really old. My character, I talked to the DM privately before this, has been around since the beginning of time.
That's not that old.
It was 400 years.
Nah, that's pretty young, honestly.
And he also had a eidetic memory, so he remembers everything from it. We got teleported to a different realm that had futuristic robots in it. And in there, we were sneaking in. A giant robot, you know, came to attack us. We hopped through a portal. We had cameras so we could see what the robot was doing. We had to figure out how to defeat this giant thing. One of our characters has a homebrewed subclass. Homebrew is basically when you make something that is not actually made by D&D. It can be based off of something, but it's basically just writing your own stats based off of their system. They had a homebrewed thing where they would pull tarot cards, which are basically future reading cards or mind reading cards. They're spiritual cards, basically. Each card has many possibilities for it. They just finished every single card. There are hundreds of possibilities. They decided to pull a card on it. But we also decided to throw a little rock on it that when it hits the ground, say, think fast, chuckle nuts. just because we found it on a computer and we decided to copy the file onto a rock. Don't ask. We just decided, you know what, it'd be really funny if we just threw it in there and see what the card did. The card happened to provide the effect of this creature, or whatever it is, will follow the next command it is given. And the command was on the rock. This was complete chance. We did not plan this because that's random over 100 different chances. It played Think Fast, Chuckle Nuts. So the robot had to think fast. Fun fact about robots, this is why, you know, computers crash and stuff like that. When they activate something, they don't realize that they can't actually do it. Because once they get to the point where they realize that they can't actually do it, it shuts down. So if you literally tell a AI computer, which is what this thing was, to think fast, it will think as fast as it can to the point that it breaks down.
It works.
It works. And it was hilarious. It was such random chance.
You know, that's something that I really like about D&D is just the weird stuff you can do.
Oh, yeah.
That shouldn't work. And it just kind of does have something.
Yeah, and then it just does work. Actually, that leads me to another character that I had. This one was named Alistair Zenith III, and he was a halfling druid. Very interesting combination. It was a randomized character. Halflings have an ability called Lucky. In D&D, when you try to do almost anything, you roll the 20-sided dice, and then you add other modifiers, other numbers that you choose, which is, you know, what makes your character. Halflings have an ability that when you roll a 1 on the 20-sided dice, which is a critical failure, you get to re-roll it, which is a very good ability. But this halfling, this darn halfling, kept on getting nat 1s and re-rolling them into more nat 1s. You can only use the ability once per roll. So if you get 2 nat 1s in a row, you have to take a nat 1, which is 1 in 400 chance each time, and I kept on doing it. So this character tried to do the most dumb stuff, which included, one, we fought a giant wasp, and when it died, we realized that it actually had a hive on its body. I decided to take the giant wasp eggs and raise them for myself.
Why don't you just make them like omelets or something?
We thought about that. I like having pets in my D&D games.
Yeah, but like, think about killing a giant like wasp queen and then like turning its eggs into omelets. That'd be kind of cool.
I feel like you would die.
Not really. I could do it. I could do it, honestly.
Oh yeah, you that big and mighty, huh?
No, I'm just dumb enough to do it.
That's fair. But when these things hatched, I thought that they would be small little babies. No, they turned into full-grown, intelligent wasps that recognized me not as their parental figure. So they just attacked me on the spot. This is because I got a nat 1 on animal handling to make them mine. One of the other things that this character did, we were up against a stone golem that was held together by vines in the center. And because it was held together by vines in the middle, my dumb halfling thought, hey, if I reach my arm inside the stone golem and cast a fire spell, I can make it burn from the inside. My nat 1 intelligence check didn't tell me, obviously, was that if I do that, my arm will probably get crushed by the stones. Because, you know, it's moving stones. So I reach in, cast it, I try to pull my arm out, and I rip it off. My character just doesn't have an arm anymore.
What, did you kill the golem?
No!
Oh, well, that's just dumb then.
It was! And this character was so unlucky that in real life, I just didn't want to play them anymore. I tried killing them, but they were so unlucky because my goal was to kill them. They were so unlucky that they kept on living when I wanted them to die. They were that unlucky. I don't remember how they died, but they just died. And that's actually where Stiggy came in, my hammer-dropping bird. That was my new character for that campaign.
Now, I have a question. Could you create a character that just, like, constantly revives itself no matter what?
Actually, that is technically possible. It's very hard for a player character to do, but there is a very commonly known creature called a lich. Liches are wizards that purposely killed themselves but had precautions made to make them come back to life. So if you have like a timed spell or something like that where you literally kill yourself and then you come back to life, that is called, you know, being a lich. It is pretty hard for a player character to make it so that they can just keep on coming back to life. There are abilities that do that.
No, what I mean, like, just like canonically your character cannot die.
No, unfortunately, because the whole point of D&D is to have all of the characters be equal to each other. I do actually have two characters that were one, I'll explain that in a second, that were exactly equal to each other. Their names were Alphys and Asgor Carison. The story behind them is that there was a rich human couple that were planning on having twins. But as all of the fantasy stories go, one day a hag came to their door and asked to stay there for the night. They, being the rich humans they are, said, haha, no. And the hag said, all right, fine, I'll curse your wife. Your children will be evil. And they're like, oh, crap, that's not good. They weren't religious at all. They didn't believe in the gods very much. But at this point, they were so desperate for their children to, you know, not be evil as any parent would want, that they went around to every single church that they could, any single, you know, like temple or anything, and prayed to every single god to save their children, make sure that they are not evil. And two gods responded. One of them was a god of good and light, and the other one was of dark and evil. Neither of them realized that the other was influencing, helping the children. So they kind of clashed. And when the children were born, there was only one child born. And as it grew up, every other day or so, the nannies, because they were rich humans, noticed that they would have different personalities and different behavior. Sometimes one would laugh all the time and the other one would, you know, bite and be, you know, a mean baby. When they grew up, they realized that this was a literal bipolar child that turned into clerics of that god that saved them. And it was a lot of fun because when I met the party, I would look like, you know, a normal human. They were both humans. They were technically Azimars, which are humans blessed by gods, which, you know, makes perfect sense. They would, you know, flip-flop every couple of days or so. It would depend on a role. But when I met the party, they didn't know this. So all of a sudden, you know, we slept at a camp one night, and then the next day there was somebody else in my tent. The thing is that they shared the same memories, but only one person could be in control of, you know, the person at one time. Which is also really funny because when we died, the DM actually took us to basically heaven. And we were like, wait, the campaign isn't ending because we all died? No, he had a plan for if we all died and we, you know, we would have to go through a quest in heaven to get our lives back. But when we went up here, my bipolar character, Alphys and Asgore, were two separate people. Because when you die, your soul gets taken to heaven. But this one character literally had two souls in one. So they became two different people, which I thought was really fun.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking like, wait, hang on, they're technically two different people, so how does that work?
Yeah. It was a pirate campaign. It was called Ghosts of Saltmarsh.
I love pirates.
Yeah, no, they were a lot of fun. But we were elected as the captain because depending on who we were, we made the most rational decision that we could.
You either made the rational decision or the fun decision?
Unfortunately, it was rational. We did have some other fun characters, but I was elected the captain, which was good. But we were also incredibly rich. This campaign had a lot of money. So my character just kept on buying more and more pets. I had two giant dogs, also known as mastiffs. I had two horses, two mules. I had a parrot, a tiger, a tessera. I had a lot of pets. I just kept on buying them.
This was on a boat?
It was on a boat.
How big was the boat?
Pretty big. We had a 20-person crew by the end of it.
I imagine you need a big boat with all those pets.
Oh, yeah. We had all different kinds of characters. I was the captain. We had a medic. We had a cook. We had everything that we needed, except we also had the heavy one. His name was Grunk. He talk like this, have big stick. And they were previously a player character, except that character left the campaign. But we liked Grunk so much that he stayed in the campaign. And literally, our payment to him was we had to get him big stick. That is all he wanted.
Honestly, I think he deserves a shiny rock.
Yeah, they were pretty fun. The last character that I have in mind, I think he was pretty fun. His name was Minuscule the Monstrous. And for those who don't know, minuscule is another word for small, itty bitty. And
so he was like what? Like 5'2"?
Yeah, 5'2". So this character was a halfling, but that's not why he was small. In real life, there is a birth thing called dwarfism. You're super small. I thought, what would happen if you gave a halfling dwarfism? This would effectively make them, you know, half of a half or a quarter. So I called them a quarterling. They were 2'3", and they were a barbarian with a normal character's stats.
Okay, well, I mean, I think that works. I mean, a really small person who's insanely violent, you're not going to see them coming.
That is fair, but my main battle tactic is one of our other characters would pick me up and throw me into battle.
They should have been an assassin. That would have been perfect.
But he also talked in a squeaky voice. I'm not going to do it. I can't after that. But also, he started off with a pet rat. And we decided, because my voice was so high-pitched, I could talk to my pet rat. We would just squeak at each other. My character was that high-pitched. But yeah, those are all of my most interesting characters. I have had tons and tons and tons of characters. I've had fire dragonborns. I have had sneaky wood elves. I have had tinkering gnomes. I have had almost every single kind of character that you can make.
You know, after hearing this, I really want to get into D&D. I'm not sure if I'm going to anytime soon.
If you are looking for groups and you are a starter, you can go to roll20.com. On there, you literally go and search up the times and days you're available and what kind of thing you'd want to play. And then there are a bunch of players or DMs saying, hey, we're looking for players, or hey, we're looking for a DM, come join us. And literally in there, you put in a resume, who you are, what you like, what kind of character you would play. And they have hundreds of responses, like it's an actual job interview. And they choose, you know, the people that they like the most. So, unfortunately, it does take a lot of time and determination of applying to a bunch of different campaigns. But you are able to join one. And there is actually a special check filter to say, does this game accept newer players? Or players that, you know, don't know a lot about D&D. And a lot of the time, most campaigns are open to it.
It shouldn't be too hard. I consider myself to be a likable person at the very least.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, let's go with that.
I mean, well, thank you so much, Zip, for taking time out of your day to come here and talk to me about D&D and tell me all of the intricate things that I still don't understand.
I tried to leave out a lot of the, like, you know, finer details about making characters, stats, and all of that, but that's all stuff that you can learn on your own.
Yeah.
The thing is, I really like telling D&D stories, except most of the people I'm friends with, they hear them so often that they don't like it when I tell them anymore. So I'm very happy that I got the chance to come on here and tell some of my best ones.
I just like hearing weird stories. I find stories to be very interesting. But anyways, thank you. Thank you for everyone who took time out of the day to listen to us ramble and talk about stuff that I'm sure you guys probably don't understand either. Hopefully everyone has a good day. Before we end it, Zip, do you have anything to say?
Thank you for having me, I guess.
Thank you, Zip, for coming down. And with that, everyone have a good day.
Hey, good morning, everyone. My name is James, and I'm broadcasting here with KBPS. And today I'm going to be talking about an album that recently hit its 26th anniversary. This album is called Either Or, and it's by an artist named Elliot Smith. So for those of you who might not know, Elliot Smith is an local Portland artist who gained most of his traction when the movie Good Will Hunting came out, and the director used many of Smith's songs in the movies. Many of these songs came from his album Either Or, so it's known essentially as his breakthrough album that would give him most of his fame and notoriety. One of his most popular songs on that album was a song called Between the Bars, and I would like to share that song with you today. So for those of you who haven't heard it, I hope you enjoy it. And coming up, here is Between the Bars by Elliot Smith.
Drink up, baby, stay up all night with the things you could do. You won't, but you might. The potential you'll be that you'll never see. The promises you'll only make. Drink up with me now and forget all about the pressure of days. Do what I say. I'll make you okay and drive them away. The images stuck in your head. People you've been before that you don't want around anymore. That push and shove and won't bend to your will. I'll keep them still. Drink up, baby, look at the stars, I'll kiss you again, between the bars where I'm seeing you there, with your hands in the air, waiting to finally be caught. Drink up one more time, and I'll make you mine, keep you. Where I like you the best, and keep the things you forgot. The people you've been before that you don't want around anymore. That push and shove and won't bend to your will. I'll keep them still.
And once again, that was Between the Bars by Elliott Smith. And that is certainly one of his more recognizable songs off the album. And I believe just one of his more popular songs in general that he made. But as I said before, I believe that there are a lot of wonderful songs on that album. And I believe that there are a couple on par, if not just a little bit better in my own personal opinion, than Between the Bars. And I'd like to share a couple of them with you today. For any of my audience who hasn't heard many of the songs off the album, or maybe hasn't heard of Elliott Smith at all. So next up we have a song called Alameda, and this song is actually based off of, or it's named from a street in Portland, and Elliott Smith was actually a bit notorious for doing this in many of his songs where he'd reference places in Portland. So for me, being a local Portlander, it's kind of interesting being able to kind of connect more with the song lyrics with all these small references that he makes to my hometown. I think it's really interesting, and I'm sure that many of you who also are from Portland will appreciate it in the same way that I do. So once again, next up is Alameda.
You walk down Alameda, shuffling your deck of trick cards over everyone like some precious only son, face down about a champion.
Again, that was Alameda. And as I stated before, a lot of the songs that gained a lot of traction and gained popularity were initially put on the movie track list of Good Will Hunting. And I think that some of those songs were very good on there, and I'd like to share a couple of those that you might have actually recognized if you've seen the movie before. So the next song that I want to play for you is called Angelus.
So
Someone's always coming around here, trailing some new kill. Says I seen your picture on a $100 bill. What's a game of chance to you? Him as one of real skill. So glad to meet you, Angela. Picking up the ticket shows there's money to be made. Go on, lose the gamble, that's the history of the trade. That you add up all the cards left to play to zero and sign up. Don't start me trying now. Cause I'm all over it, Angela. I can make you satisfied in everything you do. All your secret wishes could right now be coming true. Be forever with my poison arms around you. No one's gonna fool around with us. No one's gonna fool around with us. So glad to meet you, Angela.
That was Angelus by Elliott Smith. And for those of you who don't know, Elliott Smith was not actually born in Portland. He was born in Nebraska, and then he moved to Portland at a very young age. And he would release 5 studio albums before his untimely death in 2003, with his last album coming out in 2000 named Figure 8. And the next song that I want to share with you is a song still on Either Or, and it is titled Ballad of Big Nothing.
Thank you.
for joining me today. I hope you all really enjoyed the music that you heard and maybe discovered something new if you had never heard of Elliott Smith before. And I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day.
KBPS on PRP, the new student show airing on Portland Radio Project, featuring Benson High School KBPS radio students. On air since 1923, KBPS is the radio station located at Benson High School. Staffed by students while they learn about the communications and broadcast industry. Streaming 24/7 at www.kbps.am or 1450 on your AM dial. KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Portland Radio Project is your nonprofit community radio station, closely tuned into Portland. On the dial at 99.1 FM in the heart of Portland and streaming worldwide from any computer at prp.fm. This concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joe Anderson, and this has been an hour with KBPS on PRP.